Welcome to The Art of Construction, the podcast dedicated to helping you grow your business. Together, we'll explore the world of construction with some of the best minds of the industry. Your host, Evan Tilley, a micro-influencer and sometimes disruptor, will take you on a journey that will lead your business to the next level.
What's up, Art of Construction Tribe? Devin Tilley here, and we have a great one for you today. We get to go in and talk to Cutler Knupp, who is the managing director at Haskell. But Haskell has been working as a design build general contractor, has a great history, and credit where credit's due, Alice Leung, who's given us so many awesome disruptors and amazing people in the industry that we've had so many great Fireside Chat podcasts. And this is another one where there's a picture where the big pitch competition, and it's really cool to see these people first who and then what coming together. So we get to talk with Cutler today, and Cutler is part of Disrupt Tech, is a really cool platform that what the message we want to convey to you, Tribe, is that the industrial construction landscape is changing, and how to engage with it is one of those things we're trying to figure out every day. And we're going to talk about that, right? So specifically sharing how investments are thought about and how we work through exploring thesis and development of innovations to reality. And so how it's going to benefit you is that Cutler sees the benefit of being continued exposure if their brand to the broader market as a partner and an ally. And what we mean by that is that with Haskell and Disrupt Tech, it's built internally, and now they're trying to bring that out and take it to the next level and hopefully igniting more conversations around how to improve on this massive and very important industry together, right? And as the intro says, you know, we hear micro-influencers and sometimes disruptors. What do you say we go talk about Disrupt Tech, right? And so my main perspective for this is that Haskell, they're putting their money where their mouth is to push forward the messy progress of construction with their platform, Disrupt Tech. It's like AEC Industry Shark Tank. How cool is that? So how can this be replicated across construction? So without further ado, we're going to get to talk with Cutler Knupp, the managing director, and have as much fun as possible. What do you say? Let's go do this, Tribe. Lock and load. What's your favorite beverage?
I'd have to say it is really anything with hops, but prefer a good IPA at any day and anywhere.
Awesome. Well, where are you from, and what's one in your area that comes to mind?
Yeah, so I'm currently posted up in Jacksonville, Florida. The Sunshine State. And my favorite place that I've traveled would have to be the British Virgin Islands. I was fortunate to go down there with some friends, rented a sailboat and island hop down there in the beautiful crystal clear waters of the British Virgin Islands. And it was second to none.
Beautiful. Give us one story from that trip.
Let's see. So lost my cell phone trying to record myself doing a backflip off the top of the boat first night. Needless to say, I had a couple drinks in me already. We were moored up the next morning, or actually later that night, my friend and I were hanging out on the boat, and he looks over and he goes, "Hey man, you see that?" And we looked over, and it was basically my phone lighting up, and it was about 30 feet down, and I had a LifeProof case on it, and it lit up, and it was either low battery or something like that. So he's like, "We'll be able to get your phone." Before I even woke up the next day, he basically plugged in my phone with my playlist, and I woke up to like my BVI playlist going. I was like, "No way." We woke up, I have a video, it's almost 3 hours long. It first floats down to the bottom. We got some crabs coming up and like messing with it and stuff.
Oh, man. What a story. Yeah. That's super cool, man. That is having as much fun as possible, but there's nothing like the phone, right? When you talk to disrupting technology, if you don't have that piece of technology, you're kind of dead nowadays. So
absolutely. Yeah. And it was a brand new phone too, actually. And so my wife was pretty upset. She's like, "I told you were going to lose it." And then and I got it back. So I was like, "Ha, got it back." But yeah, it was good stuff. It's kind of totally random, but yeah.
Awesome. Well, what do you like to do outside of the construction silos we're going to talk about breaking down that we passionately call the art of construction?
Yeah, I'd have to say anything outdoors. Big golf guy, big outdoor sports guy, whether it's, you know, mountain biking, snowboarding, just hiking, whatever. So, but I'd probably say hobby would be golf when I can get it in.
We're definitely cut from the same cloth. That's my passion as well. At our retreat center, we have a little 9-hole golf course that I built that it's just a project of mine that we, so we go there and do the wanching golf, and then Bandon Dunes is like my Mecca. That's my place to go. Man. So
yeah, dude, that's about as good as it gets right there.
Yeah. Heck yeah. Awesome. Well, what led you to being the managing director at Disrupt Tech?
I guess I'd say a series of fortunate events. I, you know, grew up in a pretty small town in North Georgia. Pretty humble beginnings. My grandfather and my father were both entrepreneurs. As I was coming up, wasn't sure what my college route was going to be. Went to Kennesaw State University, which is a little bit outside of Atlanta. Luckily kind of surrounded myself with some good people and got some good mentorship along the way. And I ended up finding myself down the track of finance and accounting, business strategy. And then one thing led to another, did a bunch of internships, kind of floundered my way through what I really kind of liked, ended up getting an internship with a really, really great mentor who was a big M&A banker, also corporate kind of led finance for UPS for a while. And, you know, he'd done a bunch of deals and he was like, hey, you want to come join me in this path? And I need a lackey. And so I was like, sure. So got introduced to corporate development kind of head first and really enjoyed doing deals, making deals. It was a IT services company in its core, but we were acquiring other businesses that were similar and some software companies and deployed a roll-up strategy, brought in some private equity, saw kind of the good, bad, the ugly of that whole journey and really, really enjoyed seeing businesses grow, enjoyed technology. Always kind of from my roots had been interested in entrepreneurship and then venture capital. Cause when I was first coming up, that was when a lot of the regulations were changing around venture and it was becoming sort of a hotspot when there hadn't been the light on it kind of prior. And, you know, I'd always kept the book of ideas, good and bad ones alike. So I'd always, again, have been interested in creating things. And so I found this opportunity at Haskell where they were looking to start up a corporate venture arm and had the autonomy that I like operating under where it keeps me motivated. It had all the kind of right flavors around investment, technology, building new things in an industry that, quite frankly, you know, I could understand a little bit easier than some of the software businesses that I'd looked at in the past. So it was a perfect match and timing lined up. And next thing you know, I'm here talking to you, Devin.
Awesome. Well, what a couple things. The first thing you said, I was lucky enough to be surrounded around good people, right? And that we can't say that enough, right? And that's why we do this podcast, right? But then managing money. And I love how that it was IT services at your core and then figuring out how to grow business because IT, and you got to figure out if you're a VC, you got to figure out cash is king and then being able to align with the platform with Disrupt Tech through Haskell, who a lot of these companies that are legacy are creating these VC arms. And I couldn't agree more. I love construction tech and IT, but it's like, how do we turn that into something that the warriors that are putting their hands in building better buildings, how does that help, right? And so I'm really curious, can you talk about Haskell and the function that Disrupt Tech serves for Haskell?
Yeah, for sure. So agree kind of with everything you said. And I think, you know, corporate venture is kind of a lesser known kind of space in the investment community. Most people are pretty familiar with, you know, what would be private equity or venture capital, but when it comes to corporate venture capital, it's a little bit less known. It's not necessarily as common. I mean, in some form or fashion, you find it in most Fortune 500s, but it's sort of the lesser known evil or good, actually, I should say. And I think what's interesting about our space specifically is you're seeing more and more to your kind of earlier point about in our space. In AEC, and you see whether it's general contractors, materials companies, folks that are involved in the supply chain or equipment, having dedicated resources and groups set up similar to like a Disrupt Tech. And they're basically there to kind of say, look, there's enough happening in the space now that's causing, you know, significant or will be a significant disruptor to us. And instead of us having to just react and understand what that means for us, when we get hit by the wave, we can get in front of it and we can be a part of it, right? And we can be riding that wave. And that's the idea really behind corporate venture in general is like you're making strategic investments that are applicable to the core business and bringing those external innovations internal, internalizing and finding out how to internalize them and learning about, you know, how that works in the overall ecosystem of your corporate environment before it's kind of forced upon you, right? So I like seeing more and more venture activity in our space from the strategics or from the actual players who are executing, because I think we are special, right? We're special in our own right. This is a different space. There's a reason that one of the, you know, most one of the oldest industries in the world, one of the biggest, is still one of the least disrupted impactfully, and there's so many opportunities that have still not been touched, and it's because it's tough and it's challenging and it's hard. And I myself was, you know, I don't like sharing this a bunch, but I mean, I was humbled very quickly when I came in, right? I was riding a pretty good wave at the time, and I was coming from, you know, software, super, super high margin business, you know, was rolling up all these cool software companies and that were making a bunch of money. And I was like, oh, here we're coming to construction. And it's like, well, I don't really know much about it, but you know, like how hard could it be, right? If I figured all that out, you know, and then it was a very short period of time before I was like on my knees, like, you know, grasping for air, right? So it was like pretty humbling. But I think what's awesome about it is that there's a reason we got here. And the more strategics that are taking active roles in supporting this type of activity, it's going to be very beneficial, because what happens is what I see is a lot of startups that have really good ideas, and they're coming in and maybe they had an exit in another industry, and they see all the headlines. They're like, man, this industry is huge. They need all this help. I'm going to go start XYZ company in construction. It's going to be the next hottest thing. And then they quickly get humbled, just like I did, right? And understanding that there's, you know, different mentalities towards technology. There's different, you know, there's different levels of embracing technology, how we buy technology, infrastructure needs are lacking there from how you deploy technology. And at the end of the day, construction's hard. So I think the more strategics that are involved, better off, and the quicker the adoption will be driven, and the more value that these startups will be able to gain from it. So I think out of all industries that have corporate venture functions, I think that the one that is going to, at the end of the day, 50 years from now, a case study about where it was most impactful, I honestly think it's going to be in the architecture, engineering, construction space, where corporate venture was able to make the most headway, because that handholding, that really one-on-one engagement needs to happen, and there's a lot to be learned through that. So again, a lot of value to be gained from it. But yeah, I'm excited to see all the activity in the space as well.
Absolute gold. And I hear you talk about corporate venture capital, which is lesser known. I think cash in general is pretty lesser known in construction, because now is the time, because there's so much disruption, because the warriors that we call them, the actual players on the field, are getting so burned out, and the new people coming in are getting humbled quickly. Like we're launching a whole new platform called AOC Master Facilitators, and we're working with different manufacturers and going out in the field, and we're doing my own show home right now. And we're working where it's getting the people to show up and say, hey, there's this new shiny object, to use this technology and use this product and use this. And they're like, I don't have time for that. Like, I got 10 other jobs to get to. And so you have to be like, to get humbled, you have to get in, like, and you have to get in not for a couple of days. Like, I'm 25 years in it, trying to understand how to use technology in my own businesses and all the warriors and all the facilitators around us. I really appreciate you saying that, how humbled you were, because nothing drives me crazier. Like, we get 10 a week of an IT platform wanting us to have them on the podcast. I'm making that number, but a ton, like, constantly people on the message board. Can you talk about to this owner about this amazing IT thing? And the answer is usually no, unless they come from a different perspective. And that's what I love about Alice Leung, and why I mentioned her at the beginning, because she was in construction. Because if you've been in construction, you look at the lens differently, because we really do want things to work. The warriors, the people that are doing it, the owners like me, want more technology. But it has to move the business forward. It can't break the business and the data drop chasm that over and over. So I'm curious, yeah, can you talk about the history of Haskell and the design build model, to kind of go back to the beginning of how and why that you guys are going down this vein, because it is still forward thinking. Even if you're on the outside, like you said, from the IT, you just think a lot of this stuff is obvious until you get in it to win it.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And before I kind of get onto that real quick about explaining a little bit about Haskell and how we got here, I'd just like to riff one more point on that piece that we were going on, because I think it's important. As like, there's literally, I cannot go on one of our sites without completely being blown away by the complexity of what is going on and taking place in front of me. Right. And so like, you know, I have a small team that I work with, and, you know, my right hand is now one of my, you know, best friends that I work with. And it's just like, we look at each other every time we go on a job site together, and we're just like, this is where it breaks. Like, this is why a lot of the pie in the sky that's painted and that's sold, and that's the vision that's like, oh, it's easy as 1, 2, 3. And then you go out and you walk on a project and you're like, good Lord, like this is complicated. And there's a lot of people doing a lot of different stuff all in tandem. Right. And then you go into the project based.
I challenge you that they're not doing it in tandem, and that's where the shit storm happens.
There you go.
Because we assume they're all doing it in tandem and the handoffs are all working. And in reality, the left hand is not talking to the right hand. And that is where technology needs to come in for these handoffs that we call the customer care wheel, because your internal customers have to see the value of that. If you're giving them a shit sandwich and say, this is going to make your life so much better, and they don't want or know how to use it, we have a long ways to go in this world. But I was so excited about this podcast today, because you're not just an IT platform that's never done it. You're a contractor. You're the history of Haskell. That's what I want to hear. Like, you guys have been at this design build model for a while, and now you have a team within the team to work together. And I appreciate how you're talking about how the handoffs are not easy, because your team is a different team all working together in a common goal. And each project is another common goal, right?
Yep.
So it's not easy. And I used to think, it's like, well, the huge projects are the most complicated. Sometimes an indoor-outdoor living space or one corner of a concept that is new and unique can just drive you crazy. We're documenting. You can go to see my LinkedIn page where we're doing a video every week that's just in the business, that every day I'm like, what? This is what's derailed us this week? And it's, yep. The people are trying to do everything they can. It's the process is broken. You know?
Yep, absolutely. And
the permitting and all the things that are out of your control that blow it up every day. And then how do you react? How do you react and still keep the positive mental attitude is the psyche of this thing is, anyway, I'm going off because it's like, so I'm so passionate about this. And you know, it's closing the 300th episode. And you think people are like, Devin, you don't know how to just do this. I'm like, I feel more confused every time I do it, but that's why we're going to, as lifelong learners, we're going to keep working through this together to break through this ceiling and learn from this and document it. But we have to first look back before we look forward. So
yep.
I appreciate you. You and I our juices are flowing together, and I'm sure the listeners are feeling the same way. But I raise my hand and say, like, I don't really know the history of Haskell. I don't know much about Haskell at all.
Yeah. So I'll give kind of a quick rundown. So, Haskell, design build general contractor. We do projects all over the globe. The main kind of book of business that we're probably most well known for, and that's definitely a cornerstone of the business is around our consumer product goods, food and beverage, beer, wine, and spirits. So that's kind of where ENR puts us, you know, top in most categories kind of across the board. Industrial manufacturing, right? So raw product in, finished product out, and everything that goes on in between, right? And so a lot of complex processes in there, but we've been doing those type of facilities for a variety of clients in a variety of different industries all over the planet for a very long time. So that's kind of really where we stake a lot of pride in the business. We also do a lot of aerospace work. We do a lot of work for the DOD. We do a fair amount of maritime. We've got some higher education in there. Water, wastewater, kind of runs the gamut. But again, design build, 80% of kind of what we do is the design build delivery model under that. And we got offices all over the US and globally. And again, we kind of, we follow our clients around the world. So we'll be in the, you know, Philippines at some point. We'll be building a roastery in China. Will be all over the planet, basically. So it's exciting stuff, and really, really cool project set, which was another reason of what kind of interested me to join the firm as well, is just operating in a lot of cool areas. So that's kind of the core of it. And then a little bit of history is, we're headquartered in Jacksonville, Florida. It's where the founder, Preston Haskell, just kind of laid his roots. And, you know, really at our core, innovation is really nothing new for the business. So I like to kind of use this a lot internally. But, you know, Preston Haskell was a pioneer of DBIA, the Design Build Institute of America. And he helped to pioneer and lobby for a lot of the changes that took place, in the 60s and 70s around kind of what is, how do you operate under the same banner and the same flag and the same roof, bringing those architects, engineers, and builders together to execute accordingly. So that model didn't really exist prior. And he was driven by, a mindset of innovation, and solving the challenges, right? And saying like, this is pretty complicated anyway. What if I, kind of bring in folks and kind of put them on the same teams together? And is this going to streamline kind of how we execute? So that was kind of a lot of the genesis for kind of how we got to, design build as we know it today. Also did a lot around kind of tilt up. So we were one of the first folks in the industry to utilize tilt up methods for construction, which was pretty exciting as well. So again, innovation is kind of nothing new for the business, but I think we're definitely on the next generation of it. So Preston Haskell has since kind of stepped out of an operational role in the business. He still comes in the office, really, really cool guy. Great conversations I've had with him many times, but that's a little bit about Haskell. We're about 2000, a little over 2000 folks now. Again, all over, majority is, let's say, architects, engineers, and project managers. And then we do a little bit of self-perform, but in very specific kind of scopes of work there. So it's a little bit about Haskell.
Awesome. I love that story. And so the influence, so what influence does the design build model have on what you do at Disrupt Tech? And we kind of talked about that at the beginning to say, you have this legacy great business of Haskell that had innovation at the front, to then how does that design build model and what do you do at Disrupt Tech with that?
Yeah, for sure. So I think that the connection there is with, with the project sets that we're taking on being design build, we're able to help a lot of these startups, kind of understand like what's unique is when you're trying to pilot a technology, you're exploring a startup that you're trying to apply in the business. A lot of times it's very focused on one specific part of said project, right? So it's just in the execution, or it's maybe just focused on the design side or the pre-con or the estimating piece or close out or, whatever it may be. And so what I think's pretty neat about, where Disrupt Tech sits in that is that we're able to inject a lot of these solutions across the project lifecycle. So, it's not like we are kind of pigeonholed into just certain scopes of work at specific periods of time or whatnot. We can really come in across the project lifecycle from, conception, all the way through execution and into operations and a lot of times, as well. So that's what's kind of cool about where we sit. And we also house all those folks under one roof. And so when it comes to our innovation programming, I think a big advantage that we have is that, you've got a lot of people working towards the same mission with the same, the same brand of Haskell, but they think very differently, right? So you've got our designers and architects are arguably the best in the business, and they are outside the box, very creative, abstract. When you come down to like I could sit in a room and riff with some of these guys for hours on end about, hey, what could we, how do we turn these four blank white walls into something really cool, right? Like, these guys and gals are awesome. And then you have all the way down to our bulk engineering base, right? So these are great folks that, they're coming from all sorts of different disciplines and backgrounds, and they can get in the nitty gritty like you've never seen. And so, again, I get humbled by the people I get to work around every day, which is pretty neat too. But I mean, these engineers know, they can go into everything from, not just the basics, but into, food processing to alternative proteins to fermentation to, production of rocket fuel to, it's pretty insane sometimes. And I'm still finding out every day some person that has a really unique background and somehow they wound up working for us, which is pretty cool. So I think when it comes down to posing ideas and problem solving, you can't all think the same, right? You can't all be marching the same path. And when you mix all that together, that's how you get some really good finished product and some pretty creative solutions. So,
gold. So can you tell us about the process of how you choose which companies to invest in on your VC platform?
Yeah, for sure. So this is something that's evolved over time and continues to evolve. I think we're going through our next cycle of evolution about, just even how we price these opportunities and what we see how we see likelihood of success and go to market just with general market conditions kind of shifting some. But at its core, when we first started, we have our investment mandate, that we follow. When it comes down to when we first started, it was a lot of us building awareness of disrupt tech. So we were going out and we were kind of pitching, some of these companies that we were seeing that were like, we would find them in market one way or another, whether it be through Allison, brick and mortar, or through some of the other great network that we roll with, and saying like, oh, this is pretty neat tech. It seems like we struggle with this. We'd go bring it to a project team, or we go bring it to a superintendent or somebody else internally and say like, hey, is this something that, you're seeing too? Do you think this could be a value? We got some decent hits from that early on, and we still do that from time to time, but then it's kind of shifted once we built enough awareness internally to where now we're getting pulled into opportunities. So we went from push to now we're getting pulled, and I think that's best because there's something different about when you are bringing something to you're bringing something to a superintendent, for example, and you're saying, hey, this is pretty neat. I think there's value here. I kind of overheard that, a little birdie told me that you might be struggling with this. Is this something that you could use and you want to check out? And they're like, yeah, it's kind of cool. Maybe they're compelled to work with us because they've, be like, oh, maybe it'll be good if I work with Disrupt Tech, or maybe they're just throwing me a bone or whatever it is. But you don't necessarily get that same level of engagement if it's somebody that's like, saying, hey, I'm struggling with this. Like this really, really is grinding my gears. What can you help me? And then when we can, that's when the real synergy takes place, right? Is when we're collectively saying yes, and here are some options, and we're not pushing you one direction or another, but we've validated a few of these companies and we think that this one's the best and here's why, and then getting them involved that way. So we really feel from being pulled in, that's definitely opportune for us. And so that's a little bit about how we get traction with some of these startups. But when it comes down to how we invest and what our thesis is around that, it really comes with, is it solving a problem for our business? Big part of our diligence is, what do our people think about it? Long-winded, that's kind of what I was getting at, was, what's the reaction from our teams and from the business? They've obviously got to validate that, they're solving a big problem. One of the biggest things for me is the team. So, what's their background? What's their experience? Overall, impressions, do they have what it takes, there's a couple other ancillary things that kind of factor into it, but it's really case by case, company by company. But ideally the highest level is, does this fit our profile? And is this something that the business, is validating that there's a need in market?
I love that. You're looking inward to then look outward and then push and pull and figuring out the right way to put all this stuff together, because this is kind of that moment where I stop and say, when people start getting into construction who have never really done it and they're overwhelmed, and I just say, stop. Construction's messy. You know how you and I are going to eat this elephant together? One bite at a time. And you just have to like stop and like, because this is not a just check the box and get your dashboards and everything goes and everybody just pass it in and it just happens. It's just not how construction happens. So I'm really curious about some of the companies that you invest in and what they do. So here's the platform. Talk about some of those. We're really curious here on Art of Construction.
Yeah, absolutely. So We've built up a really good portfolio of companies that we feel are going to be very, very successful. To mention a few, you know, I'd say with one of our first direct investments was in a company called Blox, BLOX. They're out of Bessemer, Alabama, a little bit outside of Birmingham. What they're doing is they're doing modular volumetric units that can be essentially stitched together on the project sites, and they're fully furnished, right? So this is plumbing, tile, paint, fixtures, everything. And they're focused, and they grew up in healthcare. So they're taking modular, which is pretty challenging concepts anyway, but they're taking this and saying, like, you know, they originally started with, I believe it was like bathroom pods, like something simple, repeatable, saying like, what, we need 20 of these. Why do we have to keep doing this? And you see modular taking off and in different paces in different industries, right? I mean, you know, in apartments, condos, and hotels, et cetera, there's certain applications. Europe is way further ahead of us than we are here in the US. But these guys are unique at Blox, where they're coming from pretty complex use case. And so they're saying, like, we understand the complexities of delivering a hospital or an urgent care center in general, but now we're breaking it down and going to make it faster for delivery in the field, reduce some of those issues that do take place. So that's one example. We've learned a lot from that and from our relationship with them, and they're doing very well. Others would be companies like an Ipsum Pro Planner. Again, these guys are working on scheduling, and they're really the mission there is building kind of a collaborative and integrated schedule that not only gives you the insights at the highest level that you need, but also when you get down into the details of your plan, there's accountability there. There is visibility beyond what you can get from typically what's in market today. And when you think about the challenges that the industry faces, the big one is execution, right? So this is, you know, relating back to planning. So we really like what they're working on, and the way you can collaborate, and you can have your trade partners kind of give a handshake and agreement on what their expectation is for delivery on that schedule, things like that. Another two that I'll just kind of toss out there as well would be like a Rod Radar, which these guys are really, really exciting out of Israel. They've essentially created a new type of GPR that's called LDR, and it's integrated into an excavator bucket. And so every 30 seconds, utilities hit. It's a massive industry, north of $40 billion a year cost the industry. It happens to us. It happens to, anybody that's doing construction in the field, no matter what. And if they say it doesn't happen to them, they're lying. And it can be pretty significant at times. So if you cut a fiber line, communication, water, electricity, not only can it be, outright dangerous, but, it can be very costly at the end of the day if you're disrupting production or care for, patients or whatever it might be. So we're trying to do anything we can to focus on kind of safety and quality investments in that space. So this is one that we're really excited about. We deployed them here in the US and showing great results. And the best thing about it is essentially the way it works, you can just hop in the cab of an excavator, do a scan before you take your next dig, and you have confidence to understand if there's something there. The accuracy that it gives you is pretty impressive, and you're not looking at the sonar, right? So I don't know if you've seen much GPR data before, but it's kind of hard to make heads or tails out of, right? Unless you've been looking at this stuff for several years or have an expertise in it. And so this is really simple. You can see that view if you want it, but also just gives you a pretty basic readout of, hey, there's a utility or multiple utilities here. Here's how far they are away from you. And here's approximately how deep they are within an accuracy of about 4 inches. So pretty cool stuff there. Another one is Hyperframe. Really, really jazzed about what they're working on. They're basically reinventing metal wall framing. And so everything is kind of built off the BIM model, kit of parts delivered. So it's reducing waste. So it's more of a sustainable solution. The install takes place. It's all snap in place, patented technology. So essentially no tools are needed, which is really neat. And then you're able to leverage it with virtual reality and in a HoloLens, and you can scan the QR code on the part. It overlays it for where you are in space, gives you exactly where you need to place it. So essentially, it's also de-skilling the trade itself, which is exciting because labor is obviously an issue that we're facing. So we're pretty jazzed with them as well. So, and there's other great ones. Again, advanced navigation, Document Crunch is great. B, and obviously our relationship with Brick and Mortar. We just recently closed also an investment in Rumbix, which is another great company. So yeah, that's a little bit about our portfolio.
Well, what a great, and I'll recap that on the outro of the different platforms, because you got to, that's the part when I get into construction, it's not like you can just do one silo and you got it checked. You got to kind of put all these different things together into a common goal, which the history of Haskell really helps set that stage, right? So I'm curious, what kind of failure success rate are you expecting on some of these different investments?
Yeah, great question. My crystal ball says they're all going to be home runs. Just kidding, obviously. this is venture at the end of the day, right? So you're hoping 1 in 10 is the grand slam. You know, you want 3 or 4 to be, pretty good success. And then you expect the other 50% to find a nice home, but maybe you'll get your dollar back, right? So, you know, that's unfortunately kind of the odds that, you know, is facing, but, you know, that's why you do your diligence and you place your educated bets on the right teams and the right spaces, you know, solving the right problems. So, and then the rest is kind of fate. So, we're overall from the technologies that we're piloting, right? I mean, we're running, 20, 25 plus pilots a year in the business of companies that we're not necessarily making an investment in, but we are investing in them by, supporting them and driving, trying to drive adoption internally for them, et cetera. So with those companies, it's higher than 50% of, good positive reaction. But, there's also a fair amount that falls short. Another challenging piece is, you only get one chance to make a first impression, right? And so what happens a lot of times is we're bringing in the big dogs from our side, right? So when we're having an intro call or when we are queuing up a conversation for a startup, we're not messing around with folks that don't know what they're doing. And so we bring in the folks that are like, this is what I need. If you tell me you can do this, then let's rock. And half the time when they tell them that they can do this, sometimes they can't quite do what they said they could do, or it doesn't quite work as well as they expected. And so sometimes that we try to set those expectations, say these are still startups, these companies are early, we're growing with them. There's going to be pain points. They might not have everything today, but they're working through it and they deliver these features, over short periods of time. But it's hard to kind of get those folks back once they've got a sour taste in their mouth from saying, oh, well, you brought me this company and they didn't deliver or do what they said they were going to do. So, and again, to your point earlier about not everybody understands it, there's nuances that are learned along the way. So I just say like, it's more undersell and over deliver is kind of the approach that I like. But unfortunately, you got to sell it. And if the client asks for it, a lot of times they're like, yeah, sure, we can do that, right? And that comes back to bite them a lot of times and bite us and our team, because we're like, well, we're only as good as the information we're working off of. So they said they could do XYZ. We're going to believe them until, we validate that they can't, right? So it's a mixed bag. But again, that's part of it. So
I totally agree. And, a lot of times people are faking it till they make it in the tech world if they haven't actually lived it, right? And so that I totally agree with you. You only get one chance to make a first impression. Let's be real about it. Like construction tech and people that have jumped out there, a lot of people have really floundered. And how can we blame the people that have day in, day out, or the warriors out there that have to make this happen, whether they're doing the design, the execution, or all the different moving parts? So like the recent Katerra in mind, what do you foresee for the residential construction sector? Because I have a lot of these conversations and it's about the big disrupt tech. Everybody wants the big projects, right? But the day-to-day people are a bunch of little projects, even if it is a big project within the big project of what construction type. But I think we really have to eat this whole elephant. We got to get into the residential construction sector in a big way with these different disruptors.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, a lot of the companies that we look at, they do have application down into the residential side, right? So it's just a matter of driving affordability. That's another thing we see all the time is these startups that are not pricing their solutions correctly, right? They don't understand our margins. They're coming from software and they think, typical software business is 60, 70% margins. And that's just not the case in our business, right? So you have to work from a different, you got to work from a different beachhead, right? And a lot of folks, it just takes them a long time to work through that. And, you got people trying to charge by square foot and, by user. And it's like, you're dead on arrival with some of those approaches at times. And so, I think I agree with you on that. Moving on to the kind of question that you asked around Katerra, the biggest thing that I saw there was, first of all, with our investment in Blocks and our integrated design build, method and us trying to deliver, and we have a steel fabrication facility in house as well. We've seen the challenges that modular has, right? And it needs to happen. It will happen. It's only a matter of time before it is sort of standard, I believe. But there's a lot to be learned and educated around there. And I think with what Katerra was trying to do was, nobody was cheering for their demise, right? It just, you could see it coming from a mile away though, right? So, again, my background, corporate development, M&A, being a deal guy and putting companies together and, one plus one is three, right? Is the objective of any acquisition that you're doing. You saw what Katerra was starting to do and they basically just had about as close to a blank checkbook as you could get. And they were just going and they're saying, we're just going to be a force to be reckoned with by, the collaboration that we're putting together. And if we put all these pieces together, it's going to work. And that's not the case, right? And that happens all the time in deals, that your synergies that you are mapping out don't necessarily go according to plan. But when you do a lot of that really quickly, and they're pretty big, it's really, really challenging. And you can see this with even some of the big guys, right? That are, an Autodesk, or even a Procore or whomever it is, right? They're making acquisitions of these startups and their challenges alone just with bringing in a small team, right? So, but when you're acquiring large companies and you don't even really have your business hammered out yet, like Katerra, I don't even think that they had the vision, but I don't think that they even had the inner workings of how they were executing worked out by the time they were trying to bolt on X, Y, and Z, right? And eventually that's just, the jig is up, right? But growth hides all sins. And so, they were able to kind of, keep the train on the tracks for as long as possible. But eventually the music stops. And so that was kind of a special case. But I think that they had the right vision about it needs to be done. There's a better way to do this. But again, the classic, the classic fail is, they came in thinking all it is money needs to solve it. Right. And this is easy. You just put these pieces together and it's going to work. And again, another casualty. Right. So.
Well said. And if you start by, this is going to be easy, I'll challenge you. I'd really be on the fence to say, are you going to make it work? Because yeah, cash is king, but construction is messy and it can need a lot of cash really, really fast if you're not on the right team and have a right team within the team. And so let's talk about how we're going to solve this. We truly believe at the Art of Construction and building a group of master facilitators looking outward and inward that we call system built construction is the future. And that's what I totally agree with you, Cutler, when you say Katerra was doing a lot of really exciting things. I was so into it. Like I was working with them to do a podcast together and all this stuff with Katerra. Like I was deep into it, but then it was, you could never really get down to you got a niche in at some point, right? The riches are in the niches and they were just all over the place to try to herd cats. And that's been one of my challenges with the podcast of get down into that niche in. And you talked about Blocks as one of your partners in your platform. And that's one that really excites me because to me, that is the future when we talk about how to eat an elephant one bite at a time. And you go in and you talked about Autodesk. I was at a seminar it was Anthony Houck with Hypar. And we interviewed him and he was from Autodesk. And it was a presentation. He walked in and he said, everybody raise your hands if they love designing urinals and bathroom stalls over and over again. Raise your hand or Clifton Harness, who's created TestFit, has said, raise your hand if you love doing how many cars can pick in a parking lot. These things that are problem childs, like you have to niche in on that. And that's what I love when you gave your talking tracks around Blocks is how do you an elephant is okay, if we got to modularize or systemize the things that are really complicated over and over again, but they're the same. And then you have to go make things special. So that's my view. And I think we kind of share a lot of those things as master facilitators trying to figure this thing out, because there's so many cool things going out there, but we have to reduce the muda, the waste, all this stuff in construction. So what are your thoughts on offsite or system built construction as we get ready to close this thing out?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's definitely the future, right? So, there's always going to be the insulation. There's always going to be the work on site. That will always vary in degree, no matter what. But I definitely think a consolidated system around, offsite, modular, prefab, kit of parts, kind of the future is there, right? So it's going to be some hybrid of all of that, I believe. But it's going to happen in tandem. But I think what's still missing there is a level of education for all parties involved to understand and respect the complexities of each one of those individual, roles and components, et cetera, all the way up to the owners, developers, right? And understanding that, you're not going to get your Cheesecake Factory menu when you're looking at, delivering a project efficiently. You know, you need to simplify it, right? And everybody says, well, look at Ford and, look at Toyota. And it's like, yeah, but they've got, I don't know how many different SKUs of vehicle, but, X of them are on the same frame. They can switch out what they need to, and they're building, a different vehicle off the same line, things like that, that is just not there today. And it's all done, a majority of it is done with automation and robotics, and we're just not there yet. And that's going to take a lot to get there, but the future is coming. It is there. People are working on it today, which excites me, and knowing that, the future is bright with that, but again, it's going to be a little while, but it has to take place, and it is going to be a major component, of how delivery in the future takes place. That's a big reason why I think folks that are embracing innovation and, construction tech and staying up, with what's going on and where the investments are taking place and how successful a lot of these things are, they're going to be the winners at the end of the day, because they're going to be able to find ways to leverage that and integrate that in their business as a competitive advantage versus everyone else that's just sitting there trying to deliver. And it's going to all of a sudden wake up one day and be like, wait a minute, I don't have the capacity to do that, or we don't have the capabilities, or my people don't understand how to stitch those things together, or, whatever it may be. Right. So
100%. We are to construction. We do that. It's like the stitchers, the doing it a different way. It's like, we don't do it that. We're too busy. I'm like, well, the ones who are going to eat your lunch soon, right?
Yeah.
And how soon is that? Well, there's the VC world that we're all trying to figure out. So what is your crystal ball for the future with technology and construction?
Yeah, absolutely. So, I'd say that, we're not... I'm trying to think of a good analogy for it, but we're the ones that are at in it every day, like myself and my team. We're seeing so much action, whether it's acquisitions, companies fundraising, major breakthroughs, et cetera. We're seeing this every day. But then I think the further and further you get out of that kind of just that that niche of what's really, the core ecosystem where this is all happening, you don't see it really, right? And so what is going to take place is that ripple. Eventually there's going to be some hits that are going to pretty quickly shake up the rest of the ecosystem once all that's kind of ironed out, right? And so I'd say that the biggest crystal ball I have is that we're still early. It's not too late, if I could, speak optimistically about it. But there are going to be changes that are going to take place, and we're seeing the reasons for them being, demographics, labor issues, et cetera, that are going to eventually just have to face the music with automation and a deeper level of robotics. Even when you think about, what is general, contractor and what the GC of the future looks like, is it going to be, how many folks are you going to need on site, right? Is it just going to be one person that's able to manage, 25 times the workload that they are today because of the level of automation and visibility that they're going to have? So again, a lot of this sounds far-fetched today to a lot of folks, I'm sure, but it's coming, and it's going to happen pretty quick too. So I'm not going to say it's going to happen tomorrow, or in 5 years, but I'm pretty confident to say by when we get to a 2040, things are going to look very different, and we're going to be reminiscing about, oh man, remember the old days. So
yeah, and genuinely, I really appreciate it. That's why I was really excited to ask that question to you, because when you get in and you get out and the different where people, the roles in construction, the answers are so different with that question when I ask it every time. But I really appreciate you talking about the reality of the situation, right? Like, I think so many people are so jaded. Like, you don't know what you don't know, and boy, you're jaded by what you think you know. And you think none of this shit's going to work until it just comes in whack, because that's what's happening, right? And so, you know, there's a bunch of kitty Terras out there that are going to be the new Katerra, right? And we're trying to figure that all out together. So what is that one thing for contractors and affiliates to think about to go out there and crush it and grow their business from your perspective?
Mm-hmm. You know, I would say, you know, first thing is invest in your people. You know, so if you've got the right people in the right places, you know, good things are going to happen. So a lot of your audience already knows this and probably has a couple great examples off the tip of their tongue. But I mean, when it comes down to like the executing the work, you know, I'd say be open-minded, be collaborative, you know, be a partner to everybody that's involved with it, because, you know, we're seeing that, you know, from when we're able to engage more efficiently with all the parties on site, and it takes a village, right? And so, you know, I just say keep your, you know, get the right people in the right place, make sure you're investing in them and giving them the best tools and digital tools they need to do their job, and then keep an open mind and keep a collaborative mindset there, so you can learn from others. And again, one thing that I think was interesting when I came into space is the competitive nature of our industry is very different. And I think that that's going to bode as a nice tailwind for us at the end of the day, meaning a lot of folks are very competitive. My business development guys would probably kick me in the head right now for saying this, but there's firms that we lose projects to, you know, that we bid against on a regular basis on things. But at the end of the day, I'm probably have a really good relationship with their tech or innovation lead, or with some of their other folks that are partnered with us in other means. And so, you know, at the highest level, I think that that's what's helping the top level of the industry really move forward, is saying like, look, we might compete on projects by project level, but at the end of the day, we really have to share, we have to be open, and we have to be collaborative to try to solve these problems together, because again, it takes a village to do this. So yeah.
Cutler, what a conversation. My outro is going to be a long one today, because so much gold, really. Thank you so much for coming and sharing your story.
Thanks, Devin. I appreciate being on, and hopefully this is helpful. So good stuff. Onward.
Awesome. All right, Tribe. You first got to start, where have we been? And I love the backbone of Haskell, right? Where when he talked about raw product in, finished product out. Tribe, that's what we do every day in construction. Now, what comes in and what goes out? That's where we need the help every day, right? And they have the backbone of big infrastructure, where they're dealing with airlines and water and major stuff. Or he even talked about a roastery in China, right? And the longer you cast your net, the smaller the world gets. But he talked about their founder. And at the end of it, he talked about the people. But he talked about how cool the founder was, who is always being an innovator. And Tribe, that's one thing. If you're a visionary leader in construction, that's a high commencement, right? And he talked about how they were the first ones to get into Tilt Up, right? And so this is not new for Haskell to be innovators. But I can tell you, for lots of construction, a lot of people that are making decisions in construction today, it is. But that is changing. And they are design, build, master facilitators working together. So we got the history. So now, where are we going? Disrupt Tech. What a cool name, what a cool platform built out of a legacy, innovative company, where they inject solutions across the project lifecycle. Inject solutions across the project lifecycle. that's rare for most tech innovations, in my opinion, because they rely on outsiders. And if you rely on outsiders, Tribe, I can tell you, if you're relying on a bunch of random people to tell you stuff, you're going to get a bunch of random stuff back. And then how do you put that together? Because you got to have the same brand and mission. And so I loved when he was talking about his design and engineering and his different people in the platform, right? And design, he talked about, they're the top notch. They can go against anybody. But what I wrote down was four walls to wow. And when it comes to engineering, he talked about how many different backgrounds. And it's fascinating when he's saying, I have people that are experts on food processing to rocket fuel production, right? And if you mix all that stuff together, you know those people are not the same, but it's a common goal. So how do we invest in others is the question that I teed up to him. And why we teed it up to him is that they're in it and they're trying to figure that out, right? But we kept talking about how construction is messy and it's always changing, right? So he talked about how that's not just one thing you just answer and you got it figured out on how to go invest in others. And you have to take the trusted advisors in-house, whatever your in-house is, and then create awareness to where he talked about how they're pushing and pulling now, which is key when it comes to any business development 101, right? And so investing in system built with platforms like Blocks, investing in project management with systems like Ipsum Pro Planner, investing in safety with Rod Radar. But what I loved when he talked about that, he's like, you know, there's a lot of kind of stuff out there that are kind of video games. We're always talking about connecting the video games to handshakes. He's like, I can tell you it's actually consumable. Like it actually does something. Tribe, I've dealt with a lot of contech. A lot of it is video games. Let's make it real. And Hyperframe, the Talking Tracks, a great podcast we just did, about effing buzzwords when he talked about the BIM kits of parts with VR and MXR and AR and all these different things. Hyperframe is one of those that's connecting it to their kit of parts. And all of us have to figure out how to build that kit of parts because construction is a venture. It's its own VC every day. At every level, it's a different VC, right? But the thing is, we are learning behind a physically built space. We're leaving something behind that's built. And I challenge you to say it's not just IT data in an Amazon server that there's an app for that. There's an update for that. Damn it, Tribe, we're building real shit and all this stuff has to come together. So to be a VC in construction, you need to have a construction mindset. And that is the goal that Cutler dropped the bomb over and over again in a good way, not in a just cash is king and money talks and bullshit walks. You have to under-promise and you have to under-price tech. This here is a key thing of what gross margin and net margin, how it equates to the briefcase builder in IT and how you actually, the warriors executing this, because you have to over-deliver, which Tribe is absolutely the hardest thing in construction tech to make this happen. But the solve is this. The solve and what's missing is the right education. And we are honored to be partnered with Cutler and Disrupt Tech with the Haskell background, right? Because Tribe, automation, it's not coming. Automation is here. It's coming to construction in a way that's actually consumable. And we're honored to have AOC Master Facilitators around the globe and hear stories about Cutler in Florida talking about their place in China and the moving parts all coming back to what makes it work for you. Tribe, what side of the shakeup do you want to be on? As he said, it's time to face the music with automation and be an AOC Master Facilitator. Crush it out there, Tribe.